At the age of 23, Giovanni Bernardone, the son of a wealthy merchant, went on a pilgrimage to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And while there, he was struck by the contrast between the lavishness inside and the utter poverty of the beggars outside. Bernardone persuaded one of the beggars to exchange clothes with him for the day, and he spent the rest of the day begging for alms, experiencing what the life of a beggar in Rome was like. His experiment, which has often been called one of the world's first empathy experiments, although I wonder if that might have overlooked some before him, led to a greater empathy and understanding with the poor. But he knew he had to do something more. Bernardone soon founded a new religious order whose foundation was the idea that its members should give up all worldly goods and live in poverty while providing aid and comfort to the poor and outcasts in society. They were determined to live like the people they served, and the order soon became one of the most famous in the Western world. Bernardone himself gained a reputation for helping anyone who was in need, as he saw it as doing the work of the sacred, assuring that all of creation, from animals to the lowest classes of human, were adequately cared for in the midst of a harsh, unjust world. Giovanni Bernardone, better known to us as Saint Francis of Assisi, has become one of the best-loved saints of the Catholic Church, so much so that you'll find many non-Catholics wearing his medal, largely because he was so willing to make his own well-being secondary to the needs of others, once he understood the depth of suffering so many were experiencing in the world. Francis once prayed to God, "Let, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love." Francis had a deep need to be used as an instrument to create a better world, one where no one need go without the basic needs of life. Now, I'm not advocating you all give up all your money and possessions and houses and go become Franciscans. But I thought of this story while I was writing this sermon, largely because we live in a day and time when the religious is either used as a tool of the state to oppress, or else it is something largely watered down to provide individual comfort for people who already have quite a bit of privilege. I thought of it because I realized so many of my religious heroes are people who gave up their own comfort to serve others. Jesus, Buddha, the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, Thich Nhat Hanh, and yes, Saint Francis of Assisi. I have to question, if Jesus or Buddha were here, what would they think of the notion that religion is merely a personal exercise, one that has no relevance to the wider world, where enlightenment simply meant making yourself comfortable and heaven is a place where we need not do anything special to reach? Would they be satisfied with what I've often referred to as the New Age brand of self-help spirituality that's in vogue today, which seems meant only to help part a lot of people from their money at times? I wonder, as I am of the opinion, that feel-good sermons, while they certainly have their place, often don't go deep enough. I remember as a kid feeling like if I left church on Sunday morning without anything on my mind, I wondered if I really got anything out of church that day, or if I needed to go back and figure out what I missed. And I'm aware that this is a constant tension within our congregations. A question that every Unitarian Universalist minister will be asked at some time in their career, and probably many, many times, is why are so many of our sermons focused on political issues? I know there are people who find these sorts of sermons less than spiritual and would rather they be skipped altogether for topics they feel would be more for them in this moment. And in fact, I know some would view bringing up these issues as being outside the realm of a religious community altogether, especially in a faith that affirms separation of church and state. I know this is amplified even more by how often religion has been used as a tool of the state to oppress throughout history. And there are exceptions, but more often than not, the banner of religion's been used as a way to consolidate power for the ruling class and provide an opiate for the masses, to borrow a term from Karl Marx. We see this in nearly every part of the Western world, from Jewish slaughters against foreigners in the Old Testament to Christian crusades and Muslim incursions. But I still believe in religion as a force for good, for change. If I didn't, I would have never become a minister. I may have become the head of an LGBT or diversity office, as someone once suggested I should do, or become the executive director of a nonprofit, not seeing my work as deeply religious work. But what I believe people most often call political activities within churches are actually justice-related. If a minister stands before a congregation and declares themselves in favor of a particular party or candidate, I would agree that is against the principle of separation of church and state. Such a minister has become a pawn for the political system. But when a minister stands before a congregation and declares the unjust nature of our world and condemns policies used to support and justify it, this is not political. This is justice. I'm reminded of the rallying cry of second and third wave feminists. The personal is political. And I would expand this. The religious is also political. To quote scholar Alvin Rapien, if one is shaped by religion, then religion will shape how they interpret their world, and that includes their political views. To separate religious beliefs from their political applications and implications denies religion its public expression and reduces it to private opinion. Religion shapes how we see the world. And if we focus only on individualistic feel-good topics, we won't recognize its application to the public sphere. I'm reminded of just how often religion has been used to help people reinterpret their world. The story of Moses and the Israelites becomes a metaphor for black slaves and the end of their bondage. A loving Jesus was hoped to LGBTQ people that one day society would accept them on their own terms. The Jewish victims of the Holocaust saw God as being tossed into the ovens right along with them. And for Thich Nhat Hanh and the followers of his school of engaged Buddhism, religion became a way to peacefully counter the forces of both the Vietnamese communist government as well as the colonialist occupiers. If you want to see a guy who didn't have partisan loyalties, look at Han. He didn't like the Americans or the communists. Like Francis, how we interpret our religious beliefs will determine how we act upon them. To quote a recent meme that was shared to me, religion divorced from politics is irrelevant. I suspect Francis realized this when he declared, "I am the herald of the great king." In other words, Francis's work with the poor and the outcasts was his religious work. Work that was making a difference in the lives of so many. But here's the paradox I really want to focus on this morning. Because I didn't advertise this as yet another justice sermon. I advertised it as, how is justice personal? Francis's work started when his heart was open that day at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. A realization that all was not right. He recognized the need for more empathy and love in the world and acted upon his realization. His quiet revolution started in him and proceeded outward to the rest of the universe. Given all of this, I want to make a modest proposal. What if justice, rather than being a merely political virtue, starts in the individual heart? What if the way to create more justice in the world is by transforming our hearts like St. Francis? Would this make justice a personal religious virtue? What if we need to be reminded that though we may be comfortable and relatively privileged, not all have it so? What if the way to growth, both in our own lives and the larger world, is by recognizing that our own liberation is tied up with that of every other being on this planet, and the fate of our souls is tied up in the state of our neighbor? Justice becomes a personal virtue when we recognize that how we respond to the world is our spiritual development. Until all have freedom, we are always at risk, seeing others as both tied to our needs allows us to see through a lens of justice and compassion. Francis's conviction that a loving God does not will suffering led him to a lifetime of service to others, and this is how he lived out his religious beliefs. Today, Unitarian Universalists around the world live out their beliefs in a similar manner. Because we believe all people have inherent worth and dignity and all things are interconnected, people within our faith are led to live this out every day. This is why I was originally attracted to our faith. We have always been a faith for justice seekers, going all the way back to Michael Servetus's attempted reformation of the church, the Transylvanian church's position on religious tolerance, and the early American Unitarians being so active in abolition, suffrage, and inclusion. Today, wherever there is justice to be found, you can be sure there will be Unitarian Universalists at the fore, ready to work for a world of less oppression and more understanding. As a faith, we recognize that the liberation of one is tied up in the liberation of all. Make no mistake, I will criticize injustice wherever I see it, in whatever party engages in it, and no matter what politician supports it. This is because my deeply held religious beliefs, rooted in our second principle, demand that I work for justice in human relations. And I take that charge very seriously. And as we end our month of looking at the second principle, I know that these have been a heavy couple of months for sermons. We'll have a change of pace a little bit as we open with our third principle next month. But I have a story. At General Assembly in New Orleans this year, a delegate was distressed at how much attention we were paying to Black Lives of UU and the cause of anti-racism. "Why can't we get back to the spiritual?" he asked. A second person responded to him very quickly. If you can separate justice work from spiritual development, you are extremely privileged. Some of us can't separate it because we can't take off our oppression. And the point is clear. The dichotomy between justice work and spiritual work is non-existent. If a person is able to make such a distinction, they would be advised to check their privilege about why they consider feel-good spiritual topics to be the most important of the day. Unitarian Universalism is not a religion where one can comfortably sit back, eating, drinking, and being merry in a world of our own minds. But it calls us to transform ourselves, to make justice a personal virtue through our realization that the work is not done until all have enough food, drink, and laughter. As I said, more pastoral sermons certainly have their place, and there's a few coming up. But I'm proud to be a part of a faith where comfort is not our first consideration, a faith that wrestles with the hard issues, even when it's unpopular, even when it risks upsetting some people. Every time I've gone to a state rally or a national rally and seen those bright yellows standing on the side of love t-shirts, I know I'm home, because my people are there. For each of us, it starts with a revolution of the heart, taking in the poor and outcasts of the world, as St. Francis once did, and being able to see our liberation as being so intimately tied to theirs. I introduced a phrase to the Strategic Goals Committee that at least a couple of them are loving. It's from an advertising campaign that was started a few years ago under Bill Sinkford's administration of our association. And I close with it. May we ever be a religion that nurtures the heart to transform our world. Thank you.